Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hello, everybody. I'm Aaron Norris, Vice President of the Norris Group. And today our special guest is Bruce Norris. A little bit of tables are turning today. He's a president and founder of the Norris Group. He's been a real estate investor since 1980 and has been involved in over 2,000 transactions as investor, builder, and or hard money partner. He's best known for his long-term market timing reports, such as the California comeback in 1997 and the California crash in 2006. And he's also the moderator of our event, I Survive Real Estate, our award-winning show that produces around almost $350,000 since we started that event back in 2008. And oh yeah, he's typically the host of this show. So welcome to your own show.
Well, thanks, Aaron. It's kind of feels funny being on the other side.
Believe me, it's same for over on this side. You saved me a lot of money in the last decade.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Let's see, I moved back from New York City in 2004, and you said, don't you dare buy anything. So I got out of debt and just been saving and bought in 2011. And in our neighborhood, that was about the bottom of the market. Mm-hmm. And refinanced late last year. And just since then, since about November, it's gone up almost $100,000.
Yeah. So you were gone in New York, though. Remember, we snagged a property for you and held it for a while.
Yeah. And you sold close to the peak. So I came back with a chunk. And so I bought the house in 2011 for about half of what it was going for. And it was a new house that they had finished building in 05.
Right.
And, yeah, but you've done that for quite a few people in our office. There's a lot of very happy people in our office, so.
Imagine the pressure of having people make decisions just on what you say. That's the scary part.
I know, and there's a lot of pressure there. So does this market feel anything like any of the other markets that you've experienced since you've been a real estate investor?
Yeah, it hasn't got there the same way, but it feels like a full-blown comeback in the sense of the aggression of the price moves. It just has started that way instead of ramped up. Normally, they ramp up, and there's a ramp-up period of statistics, of job improvement, of migration improvement, of attitude adjustment. Everything goes in unison and all dances along, and then you have an explosion when we're all happy and all the news articles are so positive, and we've just gone from zero to 100 miles an hour, and it took 6 months. I mean, basically what you just said, your house went up 100 grand. That's a big percentage jump.
It is. And it was funny because we released a press release in December, and you were predicting a 20% increase in California median price, and we got a little bit of flack for that online, and people are like, oh, he's crazy, and, you know, it's already coming true much quicker. And you knew you were being conservative at the time, but it's just been interesting how quickly it's been happening.
Yeah, and that's the nice thing about looking at the charts that we have. You know, we have a history of a lot of the charts, which is nice. So, and it was really, it's really stems from our own experience in the market. So, you know, Greg sitting down with me going, okay, well, Dad, this is what's going on. We buy a property and we think, okay, we're going to have to buy it close to too high of a price. And then we think, okay, we're going to sell it in 4 to 6 months, and we sell it in 22 days, and we sell it as is, and it's all cash. And I'm going, okay, well, why is that occurring? So we almost had to re-engineer or go backwards and say, okay, it's already happening, but why? And so that was different this time. We normally have a sequence to a comeback that we've breached because of policies. And it doesn't make it any less profitable. It just makes it a surprise.
Right. I was doing a little bit of research today before the show, and I looked at all the timing reports you've done since 97. And, you know, you're working on the latest one, California Comeback 2, Fast, Furious, and Dangerous. And thought we could go back really quick. Because in 97, when you wrote this report, it was at a time when everybody hated real estate. And I don't know if many people know the story about how that came into being, how you even got a platform to even talk about it.
Yeah, that was pretty neat. I'll mention Michael Carney and Cal Poly Pomona. And the reason he was important is he has a report, the real estate construction report, and it's been around for literally decades. And I was doing all my research in college libraries and stuff, and I went to there was a company where you actually had a handheld printed copy of an appraisal. It was all the comps, and they were handheld version. But in this area was all these reports from his company, and I had never met Dr. Carney yet. but I was able to access all these reports, and it wasn't just statistics, it was stories. And so I started reading these things, and it was fantastic because it was like a history of California. So I'd read in the 70s, and all of a sudden you realize, oh, wow, the Japanese, for instance, were just given permission to buy California real estate in the early 70s. Well, that was sort of like inviting the hedge funds,
right,
in essence. Mm-hmm. And so that's extra demand, and so that was an impetus to price. So it was interesting. All these things played a role, but, you know, the original idea really came from the week that you graduated. I buy you a car that cost $15,700 and a house 2 days later for $13,300. And we had come off of, and that was in 1995.
Yeah.
And we had come up a market in 89 that felt just like 05. You couldn't do anything wrong. Price would always go up. And very smart people were saying, oh, a shortage of land, da da da. It's always the same story until it's not.
Right.
And so you go through that emotional high of 89. And you get to the emotional basement, basically, at the end of 96. The trick is, if you're going to write a report that's of value, is to ignore the emotion and look at the statistics and say, we are now inevitably going to go the other way. Mm. And that's what's valuable about it, is calling it in advance. I'm glad, you know, we were saying things. We didn't get to produce a California comeback document until July, but we have said things like last year when we produced a report that says real estate all in.
Right.
In other words, I wasn't saying that it was going to move rapidly in price, but I did think that was still a valid investment vehicle.
Right.
But now that we've had price aggression, what's interesting is when you have a 96, you have an emotional bottom, and it doesn't feel like a good decision. And just like getting off in 06 felt like a emotionally bad decision. You were having so much fun, you almost didn't want it to end.
Right.
Plus, you could just go, gosh, if we could just eke one more $100,000 out of this, you know? And the danger is to let it all go back. And that's what happened to so many people that went, it didn't take long. It took 6 months too long. And all of a sudden, you weren't going to sell. And prices were declining so fast. Well, the replay of that is possible this time. That's why the comeback document really contains an exit strategy. I don't think we'll have time to write the exit strategy. I really don't. I think we're going to go up so fast.
Really?
That we're going to get mathematically done, and the second interest rates change, that'll be a big game shift. And it depends when it comes. And so that's what's, you know, the final chapter. And I really feel like we should withhold that final chapter until like the last hour of the day, because I know people go through the report and get to the last chapter. I really want to tape it closed or something.
It's funny. I almost warn people as we're marketing this, just like for chart nerds only, because there's some people that, you know, complain. They just want the very end chapter. They don't care about all your research. But you strategically do that. You give them all the charts and the sources and say, this is how we came to these conclusions. Go ahead and challenge what I've come up with.
Right. Well, and you are producing the document. The only chapter you don't have is the conclusion chapter, because I haven't seen all of the charts in one place. I can't draw the conclusions until I look at all the data. I have a good idea because I've done all the studies of the chapters, but really, I think that's what makes our report special. First, I guess there's no agenda. I'm not trying to get somebody to, okay, well, since I think this, then you get to do this with me or something. That's not part of it.
Right.
And I like that I share the methodology to where people can see, okay, this is how he does this step by step, and it's changed and evolved here, and it really has. I mean, the stuff that I thought was absolutely true can get trumped by policy.
It's been amazing, and there's been so much, and it's still going on. That's what's going to be interesting to see. You've got all this policy in place. You have Dodd-Frank that still hasn't been fully implemented, the California Homeowner Bill of Rights. It's just layers. And then how do you know what's going to come next?
Well, see, that the uncertainty plays a role in people's hesitation. So if you look at Cal Poly Pomona tomorrow, we're speaking at in Pomona, and he's got a report. And I've already been able to see the report. And so everybody's opinion is this is all coming back and everything. And then you look at the number of subdivisions created in the first quarter of in Riverside in 2013, five.
Yeah.
And so what normally would be created would be 60.
Right.
And so, or maybe actually it's 70, 75 to 90. So you're talking about, you're making 5% of the subdivisions in a market where everyone's euphoric, except for the people that have to take risks that are long term.
Right.
Because why? Well, because of uncertainty. Is there going to be a Fannie Freddie? Is there going to be an interest rate hike? Is the Fed going to still participate? Are we going to have 20% down payments? I mean,
right. There's still so many unknowns.
Right. But the bottom line is that when you buy a house right now, you're locking in an interest rate we haven't seen in our lifetime. Even if it went up, you know, a certain percentage, is still a ridiculous number. And so you're seeing the public going, that makes sense if I can only get one.
I guess that's what's surprising to me, too. I'm surprised that rhetoric hasn't changed yet, because you've got a lot of buyers that are completely pushed out because they can't afford to compete with hedge funds and investors who can do all cash, or people just who have cash on hand, the 20% down. And that's why some of the subprime programs ever existed to begin with. I'm just surprised that the California Association of Realtors, the nonprofit group, Center for Responsible Lending, they've almost pushed so hard on the other side. You wonder what's going to be available for people in the lower income categories to even get in.
Yeah. I don't like that. I'm pretty free market, you know, Republican and everything. But this is one of those cases where you go, okay, this feels like an IPO where the insiders get it for one price and the people on the outside get it for another. That's what it feels like. I feel sorry for the guy that's 21 years old that has to get an FHA loan, and he fights to get a property, and now he's paying 50 grand more than he would have 5 months ago because he simply didn't get an offer accepted and he wanted
right.
one.
Right.
It just, that feels bad to me. I don't know how to correct it. I guess there, you know, people making decisions. I mean, we've made decisions not to sell to the hedge funds. It takes private people going, no, I want some owner-occupant to buy the house.
It's interesting you bring that up, that article that came out last week about the hedge funds exiting at least one of them exiting the market, Carrington.
Yeah.
You know, but they're managing, what, 5,000 properties for Fannie, Freddie, Citibank. You know, all those properties are turned into rentals. I wonder what the government's going to do with those, and Citibank, if they'll start releasing those, or was there a deadline put on some of those?
I don't really think so. But in talking with Rick Sharga, who has really been open, you know, with that, and he was on our panel last year, I think it's some years down the road. I think they really wanted to have that government pile of properties not be competition for the private sector. And so what happened is we just have no inventory.
Right.
Well, in a way, it's been a very smart move. They're not going to lose a lot of money on those properties. And as prices go up, they're going to have a lot less problem loans, because they're, all of a sudden these people upside down are going to have equity.
Right.
So if they really, whoever thought of this, if it's really how they planned it, it's been pretty genius, to be honest with
right.
you. I think it's happened in unison with the buyers coming off the sidelines that were foreclosed in 08 and 09. And I doubt that they calculated that historic number of people they foreclosed on in 08 and 09 coming back
showing
and being
back
buyers
up.
Yeah, and really wanting back in. So that wasn't genius foreclosing on so many people, because that really set up the downturn. But and now you get the boomerang of those people being excess buyers on top of really strong demand anyway.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to see if they indeed decide to pull out and use the other hedge funds sort of follow suit.
I think what's so important about that is we put it in perspective, because you have other groups, let's say, that have shown up before. Well, foreign buyers, let's say. What percentage are they? Well, Sean O'Toole, and for our report, we've got this really cool chapter. It concentrates on hedge funds, where they bought, what price range they bought, how many they bought. And you all of a sudden, you can put that in perspective. So, okay, well, in California, we're going to move 420,000 properties. Did they buy 5% of them? Well, you know, that's what's fun is to look at and go, okay, maybe the number isn't so humongous, and maybe they don't have the same game plan, so they're not going to exit the same time. But even if they did, first of all, I'm not impressed with their timing model. We were buying in 08 and 09. They bought in 2011, 2012.
Right.
We paid a lot less than they did if we were intending to hold. I'm not sure their exit plan is any better than their entrance plan, to be quite honest with you. And a company like Carrington has decided to leave because the cap rate probably doesn't work to rent it, but they just missed one of the greatest comebacks as far as upside price. It's going to happen pretty quickly. So at the end of the day, if they wanted yield, it would have been on the upside in price, but they probably couldn't look at the model and say it cash flows.
Right.
So it's just, we've never had them as a participant.
It'll be interesting to see the people who are coming out from underwater, how they feel about what they own. If they'll stay put and they're happy, or they just can't wait to get out, or, you know.
I think it's, then that is really a really valid question. I think that they've been through a lot of grief and I don't know that you're going to be able to sell your property and replace it right away, so that'd be hard. I don't know if you're going to net enough to where you have a down payment enough under the current circumstances. And I don't know that you want to go from owning to renting. If you stuck that out...
Yeah, you stuck all the way through the downturn.
Why would you go? Why would you become a renter when you've been current all this time? I mean, that would... You know, I just think logically, that doesn't make sense to me. As a matter of fact, it looks like this is about to be fun again.
Right.
And so, okay, you could see them wanting to maybe sell and get to another location, but they want to own again, so they just have to wait till they have the down payment.
Right.
To me, that would make more sense.
It always makes me... This timing report is around 250 pages, probably over 400 chapters, and then we, in the back end, we allow people to access all the reports.
400 charts?
400 charts, sorry.
Okay.
250 pages, 400 charts. You're all really?
Chapters? We're short of you.
That's not going to fit in a day. But what doesn't make it into the report is even more interesting. You know, what's the process? How do you decide what goes in? How much ends up getting left out?
Well, you know, that's the thing. You do have to make the cut. And literally what I do is I take the table of contents of all past reports. And so we might have covered 45, 50 topics. Mm. And I know in a day, I probably have 20 that I can cover. We've had a two-dayer before.
Right. Okay. California crash was
California crash. And that was really an important document because I had to figure out sort of the ending of this thing. It was, crash was now a strong word. Mm. So I really, basically these reports are, it's the research paper saying, I don't have an agenda. I don't want to say, okay, well, this would be a really cool title. Let's do that. No, I look at the document, all the data and go, crash is appropriate.
Right.
And so, so now that we have 20 chapters in a day, a lot of this stuff, we have a very educated audience too. So they know a lot of the process and they have the other documents. So I really have to say, and on top of each chapter really is a question, why is this chapter making the cut? Mm. And it's important because now this time, there's some chapters that are new. The Fed. Well, when you look at the Fed, they're going to be a very, very instrumental in how this ends and if it ends nicely or ugly. And the odd thing is they have an agenda that's really different than California real estate. They have a national agenda.
Right.
And the jobs reports have been disappointing. The only, you know, our unemployment rate has gone down. The only reason it's gone down is people have become non-looking participants.
They've given up.
They've given up. That's your entire improvement in unemployment. They don't count anymore. They don't have a job, and right. They're still on unemployment and food stamps. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what I had to do was look at all the way back to the 1970, where the Fed was very involved at the end of the 70s, and look at the volatility of their changes from 1970 all the way to the present. Divided it up into how many times a year can they change interest rates? Because I think we're thinking, and that's one of the interesting things when you teach seminar, we asked, okay, how many people have been in the business before 2007?
Right.
It wasn't a big percentage of that audience on Saturday. It was half and half or something.
Right.
Okay. Well, what if you ask the question, well, how many times do you think the Fed could change interest rates in a year? Well, if you go back from recent experience, it's, well, they never change it.
Right.
it's always the same, isn't it? And then you find out they can change it 21 times.
Right.
And you go, whoa. So you could go, now, when Sean O'Toole and I did some research in Washington, D.C. about interest rates, and you find out, okay, this is like the lowest interest rates in our life, to me it means the progression back to normal will be faster than any pace we've ever seen in our life. So when the Fed decides to move, it's not going to be by an eighth of a point. Your mortgage rate could go from 3 to 5 in lightning speed.
And what's still amazing, in some markets, you're still going to be less than rent. That's what's so up.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing about that last chapter is we will literally play with the math and say, okay, if you get to a median price, wherever you pick the price, right now it's a little over 400. And you get to 500 grand, and then you start handing it a 5% mortgage rate instead of a 3.5. You know, you'll bring about the end of the price rise more quickly, but it'd be safer.
Right.
My fear is that you don't do it because nationally, it doesn't look like you can raise interest rates yet. You still have to buy the paper you're buying to keep the interest rates artificially down, and things don't get better nationally until California has a ridiculous median price on the backs of that interest rate.
Right.
And then the problem is really bad because we're isolated then by ourselves. We've probably blown up in price. National policy then will do whatever it has to do. And we're sitting here going, well, that was a lot of fun. Well, that's why, and I agree, that's a lot of fun. And we will ride it up until the point where we go, okay, now everything beyond this mathematically is really baloney.
Right.
Even if it goes up some more, I really don't want to participate in this. It feels like rolling the dice instead of investing. Whereas with all the proof sets that we have, I feel like we can look at a number of different categories and we've even refined them more. And we've added some new ones because, you know, just of all the studying I do, go, huh, I didn't know that. And that's what's fun. This thing has always evolved. I've always been surprised at the ending myself sometimes where I look at it and go, huh, I just wouldn't have thought that. But it adds another proof to it to where you feel real comfortable. I think the biggest thing about it, again, it has such a long history because I've been availed so much information. Michael Carney has let me go into his archives back to the 60s, and he has one copy of something and he lets me look at it. And it's fun. You know, I feel like I've been very privileged to look at all this stuff and be able to put this history together. So now, you know, starting at 70 and now it's, you know, 43 years of data. And what it boils down to is you take a price chart and whatever your assumption is, lay it next to that chart. So you think interest rates dictate price, put the median price attached to that interest rate and you go, whoa.
Right.
And the problem is it's not a standalone answer. So you can't say, oh, well, interest rates went up and prices went up. So therefore, when interest rates go up, prices go up. Well, no.
Not always. Yeah.
Okay, not always. And then same with interest rates going down. So then you have to realize that interest rates are important in the way they affect another chart, affordability. Well, then you go, well, affordability is really an important chart unless lending policies trump it and let people go into buying that shouldn't have. And so the number that should have ended the run in price didn't. And we went up 25% more from basically 500 to 600 on the backs of lending policies that have never existed before.
Right.
So then you go, okay, well, how we make a comeback is employment, except for when you pretend there's nothing for sale. And so now your policies are saying, okay, let's sell Fannie and Freddie home in bulk. Let's make partnership deals with loan pools. And all of a sudden, what should have been for sale isn't. And so that's what's the hardest thing about predicting now. Is it's really intertwined in next government policy.
Oh, boy.
But it's fun.
Yeah. You like this stuff. Are we doing the moodometer again this year?
Absolutely, because the moodometer is not just, it's not just statistics. We count on people doing the same thing over and over again, and they do.
Right.
And so that's, and that's, everybody does it. So this is news media. They will play along. One of the chapters, and I think the title is the media gets an assist, like basketball.
Right.
So there's people that feed the ball. Well, they feed the ball to the public. And you go from, like, ominous pictures in the last few years of homes floating underwater and stuff like that.
Yep.
Where, you know, those are emotional things, to 05, where the house is really being hugged in a very emotional way. Mm-hmm. Comforting. Equity. Like almost a second job producing income. I mean, all those things played in your head and go, yes, that is it's just a very comfortable thing. And that's what the media does is they join the price progression with more aggressive, happy pictures. And when that happens, people get off of the dime and they buy something. The volume of sales right now really is down as far as it is. I mean, it's still okay,
right?
But there's nothing
for sale.
So we're getting price increases, but we could go up in volume a lot more. So I'm not worried about the hedge funds leaving. They will when it's mathematically not good for them. They'll be replaced with other people.
And we can handle the inventory if it comes out.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. You know, the only place it can come out is the equity seller. And the equity seller, to me, is probably going to be an equity buyer 85% of the time.
Right.
So you'd have a temporary rise, and then they buy another one.
Well, we did not get through all my questions for this topic, so we'll have to carry this over into a second show. So next week.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.